Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. And that was the sound of me opening a prop that led me to One Old Crow Productions' performance of Cowboy Mouth this past Sunday, presented in an apartment above Lucky Chang's on the Lower East Side. I won't spoil the fun of the show by giving too much detail, but your entrance to this one will be a bit atypical. Plus, you're greeted with a snack and a free glass of wine. Always a great start to a show. I spoke with director Leah Benavides and actors Diana Bishara, Jeffrey Pomeroy, and Matthew Mark Stanna after the performance. Take a listen.
This is great.
You think so?
This is really cool. No, it was just
interesting.
I love one of the things that I'm most interested in about theater right now.
Yeah.
As an audience member, but also as a director and an actor, is theater that requires that it be done in a theater. I think we're one of the things that theater has to offer most right now is the fact that we're live, and every other art form is not.
Right.
You being in the room with us makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So to come up to an apartment and see a show was really, really cool. What gave you the idea? Why do Cowboy Mouth?
You know what's interesting is Diana. I have a theater company, and she came into audition for me, and
Diana is the actress.
Diana.
Okay.
And she came in and she auditioned for me, and we kind of had a connection, and she sent me the script a few days later, and we met up. And what's funny is that I don't think we ever thought that it would be in a theater. Like, I don't think we ever actually had that conversation. It was like, oh, it was going to be a hotel room, or it was going to be like an apartment, and so we just kind of searched around. And I think a friend of hers said, oh, there used to be a salon above Lucky Chang's and you might want to check it out. And it all kind of was kismet and came together because she, Lucky Chang's is moving like at the end of July, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So it's kind of a farewell thing. But I think that, you know, it's just a play. It's like, to me, it seems counterintuitive to set it up on a stage when they're like, create the apartment on the stage, you know? And it just feels, and it's not usually done by itself. It's usually done with another one act. And so we wanted to really make it just one act, but to feel like satisfying. And so we were thinking about, will you come here? And then I was thinking, well, let's put it on stage and let's kind of have a funky way to get up here. And I don't know. It just kind of snowballed from that one little idea, and then everything just started kind of building on that, I guess.
Well, it's great that you followed down, you like ran down all those different ideas, because it certainly was an experience to find a lobster man on the corner. I'm not going to ruin everything else, but this play starts with meeting a man on a corner of the street, which is great fun. And you had free wine. I always appreciate free wine. And we're being joined by the cast.
Yay! This is Diana. This is Matt.
Diana plays Caval. Is that the name?
Caval, yes.
Matt is the lobster man.
Matt, I'm
Robert. Welcome. And Jeff is Slim. And he'll be joining us momentarily. Yeah. So, quick rundown. And hi.
This is our house
manager.
Jenny.
House manager.
Jenny is the house manager. So after the guy in red, you see Jenny. I was just telling Leah about the podcast, and the whole idea is just to talk. So don't worry about having any sort of quote unquote prepared smart answers. There's no such thing. How did? Now I understand Caval. Not Caval. Oh my God, calling you by your character name.
That's Diana, good thing.
you brought the piece to Leah. How did you find it, and why do this piece?
Well, I have a long history with this piece a little bit. I can remember fucking reading it in grade school in that copy of Fool for Love and other plays.
You read
that
this
Sham
in grade
Shepherd
school?
Anthology. Yeah.
You're hardcore.
I went to an arts middle school and high school, so I don't know. And I geeked out on it a little bit. You know how that can go.
Well, I know a lot of people geek out on Shepherd
fucking
at that age.
Understood nothing of it, obviously. Nothing. There was nothing that I could connect to in it. But it kept popping back up in my life at various times. In college, it struck me again, and I was just like, oh, I get this now. I'm fucking ready. You know, it had everything. It had all the cursing, this amazing, like, in-your-face imagery, but I didn't get any of the hurt under it, I think.
Yeah.
Leah and I were talking earlier that You gotta live and fight a little to get this piece, to really get it.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I didn't do it then, because I wouldn't have been fucking ready at all.
You have to have been beaten down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's Jeff, by the way.
Hi, I'm Jeff, by the way. Yeah, you have to have lived a little bit. You can't, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear all these people doing scenes from this in college.
And it's like, you don't get this.
Yeah.
You don't get this at all, because I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
No, and it's funny because, like,
young.
She brought it to me, and I surprisingly hadn't read it. And I read it, and I was like, what's going on? And then I read it again, and I was like, I kind of know what's going on. And then I read it again, and I was like, I feel a little bit more. And I read it, like, 10 times. And so it was really funny because when we first met about it, I was like, so when I first read it, I didn't get it. Like, I was just really honest about it. And I think we have this kinship, and we're very, very close. And so decisions that normally would be hard were just where we felt it should be. There was never a conceptual
We were just
difference.
Kind of on the same page about it from the very start.
Yeah.
When we started talking and just and I actually didn't know Leah before, except in a professional context. I think I'd gone into audition for her a couple times, but we talked and whatever, hit it off. Mm-hmm. I almost hopped out in a reading, but I don't know, I just felt a sense when I was looking for directors. And I mean, and it was after Just Kids had come out, where they talk about this play specifically in the book, and I think that was what triggered me re-reading it. And I was just like, this play still speaks so much to our present.
Yeah.
That's one, something
so many
I'd love to
friends.
I'd love to like run down a bit. Something that in addition to what Leah and I were speaking about, theater that is immediate and very much involves the audience and requires that the audience be in a particular place. We were speaking about that before y'all joined us. But another thing that I'm very interested in is pieces like this that we bring back that there's a real danger of being like, oh, remember back when Sam Shepard and Patti Smith were writing plays on the Lower East Side?
Yeah, fucking ready? Ready for this one?
There's a danger of that. There's a real danger
much.
Of, like, saying
nostalgia.
This terrible nostalgia.
Nostalgia is the death of all great art. I actually wrote a blog post about this on our Cowboy Mouth blog.
Which we'll link to.
It's cowboymouth-nyc@blogspot.com. But yeah, nostalgia is the enemy of all great art.
How did you fight that nostalgia in this? Because it doesn't, while it does feel language-wise, there are certain hints that say, like, this is, what, 70-something?
Right.
71.
Right. 71, yeah.
Yeah, it feels early 70s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you set that up, right down to the Salinger in the room and the copy of Tarantula, which I really appreciated.
See, that's the thing. For me, to us, building this was not about the 70s, really. Really, it wasn't. All these books are from my friends and my apartments. There was no looking for books. This is still all of this. We still have the same heroes as them. I don't feel that it's that much of a different world. I don't know if you want to talk about the time.
Well, it's funny because you say like Hendrix, you know, and then you read all these interviews with Patti Smith, and she talks about Hendrix, and she talks about Joplin, and Morrison, and, like, those are people that I listen to, and I rock out to, you know, still, so it's not, too much time hasn't passed, because when you think, like, 40-something years,
it's really not
years,
that much time.
It's not that much time.
But it's, just because it's of that time, of this early 70s period, doesn't mean that there's not something going on today that we can't identify with. And you talk a little bit about the struggle, Diana. How do you keep it from being stale? Because it wasn't stale. That's what I'm getting at. Like, it did not feel like, God, we're doing a freaking period piece. Like, it's not a period piece.
Yeah. No,
it's
not
just
at all.
Of that time. And how did you, Matt, you look
maneuver
the
that?
the quiet lobster man.
Not quiet anymore.
The lobster man speaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Any thoughts?
Well, I I don't mean to speak for anyone else or anything, but from my recollection of how we dealt with that was to agree to not set it in a time.
It's timeless.
Because the piece is sort of timeless. Yeah, so we don't, like the phone that we have. We want a phone that could have maybe been around back then, but could still be around now. We definitely wanted no iPads, iPhones, anything that makes it say it's now.
Right.
Or makes it say
that it's not now.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about like an old like rotary phone.
Yeah.
And see, that would have been cool. We couldn't find it. I would have loved that.
Also, like a lot of the stuff is very personalized. Like a lot of stuff is from each of our personal.
Yeah.
Personal homes and everything. Yeah. Like things that mean something to
the
us.
The set pieces that came
out. Yeah, I mean, actually, that was a big
like, this is, that's for my apartment. The paintings, like, from my apartment. Like, everything's from all
paintings
our,
from my apartment.
Our apartment
the guitarist.
And stuff.
And we all really thought it was important to inhabit and contribute to this space as it was ours.
All
to
of
make
ours.
It
yeah.
all of ours. And we collaborated on the music. Jenny has paintings up.
Yeah.
We all made a piece of artwork. And I wouldn't consider myself a musician. And I have to say, it was so fucking... No. This was such a fucking liberating experience.
Yeah.
This entire thing. I would not consider myself a visual artist. And I'm making fucking art.
Yeah.
I would not consider myself... a musician. I played guitar on a track, I played drums on a track, because and so I feel like that really captured that spirit.
So that pre-show music that, was you guys.
That was us.
Oh yeah, and
all of us.
It was so funny because like I was like, hey guys, okay, so this is what I'm gonna do. I want to record this stuff, we'll just bring it in, we'll just do it. And then they were like, at first they were like, and it's funny is that the lyrics are, I had them do a stream of consciousness exercise the first rehearsal. So I was like, just close your eyes, put yourself in space, and just talk. And like, really amazing things came out. And so then I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but just set it aside, send it to me, I'll keep it. And then I was like, so let's just, you know, set some music to this. And then I remember they were just like, well, like, we're not going to have time to do that. Like, it's just going to, like, that's going to take a whole day. And I was like, no, we'll just do it. And like, we did it a couple days before.
Yeah.
Which is like, we're just going to do it. Like, we're just going to do
we
it
just, like,
and see what happens,
in
you know?
This fucking room with all the shit on the fucking walls
and
the drums
and the
coin. And
then it just happened and it was fun and we just did, and we were just, they were all like one takes. Like, it was like one take.
One
and we would hear us laughing in it and like, just having fun. It's like, okay, you did drums, now you do guitar, now you sing, now you do this. I mean, it's just really, it's, and I feel so comfortable with this cast because I know how it is to be up there, and I know that when I throw something at people, you never know how they're going to handle it and what's going to happen. And they have all just like, they jump in. It's like, let's try this, and they do it. And there's no arguments and there's no reservations, and that's so amazing that these actors have done that, and that Jenny just came in and she jumps in and she has all these ideas, and everybody is so free, because I want my rehearsal room not to be a dictatorship, just to be an open, awesome environment, because one mind is never as good as multiple
we
minds.
We work in theater, it's a collaborative life form.
Yeah, and it's this has been so collaborative and so amazing, you know, and everybody has contributed, and everybody's on a track of the song. Like, that's so cool that we have that.
And it's also wonderful, you know, the more theater you do, the more you realize that there's a lot of difficult personalities sometimes in theater, but this show is one of the rare experiences where I think anyone would be more than happy to go spend a day with any one other person involved and just go to, you know, Coney Island or go get dinner. You know, pick any two and you'd have a blast. Like, I think everyone
so
really
true.
Loves each other.
We love family.
Yeah, it's a great, no one rubs anyone the wrong way. Everyone pitches in.
And
it's just
trust.
It's just trust.
There's a lot
yeah,
of trust.
It's a ton of trust.
Yeah.
It's just so, it's very fucking special. I don't know, man.
And
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Y'all are getting into the Shepherd Lane.
Yeah.
We had a day off yesterday, and this one went through this depression and started texting us, I miss you.
I did.
One fucking day off.
What
this has been. And I mean,
first time I hadn't seen you guys.
It was bizarre.
And this material is very intense, and it's very difficult. It's non-linear. It has no real discernible plot. I mean, we worked to just get a story and real people on the stage because they're not written very...
You have to hunt for what the truth is.
Oh, it's so exciting. Yeah, because it's...
through this difficulty to have this group of people do that made this thing that could have been so, so hard...
Yeah.
So incredible.
Where did you find that truth? I mean, did you dig into Shepherd and Smith? Did you like read Just Kids and go into more Shepherd stuff?
Or was it more personal? Like we had a couple of days where I tend to be like, let's bring anything in, and then it's so funny because a lot of these pictures too are pictures that I just printed out, like inspiration pictures, and I, you know, spread them out, and I said, "What? This is what I feel the show is. What do you guys feel the show is?" And so, it basically just came from the very beginning. We were all on the same page, you know, and I think that we just started building upon it and building upon it. And so, when I sat down and talked to them, it was like, okay, so how are we going to make this transition from, oh, you're on top of them, baby, baby, oh, I hurt my foot. Like, that's like one of the first ones. And it's like, how do we make sense of that? So we just really broke it down, and we would do like 2 pages a day or something. Like, yeah, we'd do a couple pages, and it would be like, what would make sense? Because when you're in like a long-term relationship with someone, there are weird little language stuff that
unspoken
happens. Yeah. And so you can switch that way. Not usually when you don't know someone that well, but when you've been with someone for a period of time and you've been locked in this room for a long time, there are those transitions make sense. So I think on an initial read, maybe it doesn't, but it really does when you get into it, when you think about, when you pull upon those past relationships that you had.
And I mean, always there's these ghosts of these people in the room, and with the knowledge that it's autobiographical and things like that. But I think that that's a really tricky path to go on, because you said it yourself earlier. Theater is a collaborative art. And frankly, nobody here was at all interested in doing something that's been done before. Like, okay, Patti Smith and Sam Shepard did it themselves. Great, they are themselves. But we're us.
This show is not, we're not trying to do what they did. I think,
us. This came out of who we are and how we worked with it. And we all responded really strongly to this material and to what this material could say to artists and a community of artists now. And that is in sort of a totally different time and place, again, searching for a voice. Mm-hmm. I feel.
And
searching for a place.
I feel we made not necessarily a conscious choice at the outset, but a definite decision. It's somewhere along the line that this production is a little bit more truthful than what most people imagine when they think of this play. I think most people that I've talked to that know the play think of it as being a little bit more absurd than our
fantastical.
Yeah, and that's all wonderful, and I think we bring those elements in nicely, but
there is a lobster man.
There is a lobster man.
He's actually a lobster man. Yes.
But he is a lobster man. He's not like in a lobster suit, which is, I mean, we definitely made some strong choices that are different from the text that we came to based on how this show was with us. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've been more fucking real.
The only way, like,
in this reality, in our reality.
The only way I tend to work is that if I read something and if it hits in my gut and if it hits something. And so the lobster thing was, I remember right when we met. and one of the first things I told her, I was like, yeah, I just don't, like, I don't see him in that suit.
And I
don't know.
Like,
she never wanted that. Like,
oh,
what are we going to do?
It's scripted that he's in a suit.
But yeah. He breaks out of the shell. And we're like, that's fucking corny. Like, I don't know. I like that.
I could see somebody justifying it. But like, to be fair, I could totally see somebody making that into something awesome. Just me personally, I couldn't. So I had to find a different way, you know? And so,
and fucking Matt.
And then he just like
came in. He just like shows up, and we're like, well, I don't even know if we have to find a way so much. This guy found it, you know?
Yeah, just, I mean, it was like, you know, it was basically like, here's the costume, here's what we want. I don't want to give anything away, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah, you get a great moment there at the end. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, here's the costume, here's what we want to put on your face, this is what we want to happen. And it was kind of go through the motions, and it's like, and we just met and we talked. Like, that was the thing. Matt came in, and Matt and I just talked for a few hours, and he just said some gems come out of him, and it was wonderful, and I just felt trusting, and I felt it was important because we didn't bring him in right away. We rehearsed with these two guys for a while, and so I thought it was important just to talk to him and to get who you are as a person, because so much of who we are as a person is in this room, is in Cowboy Mouth, and I love that. That's what I gravitate towards. And so I think from that initial conversation, we were good from then on. You know, I think there was a trust, and I think you felt comfortable, and I felt comfortable with you, and then he just, like, rocked it out.
So how can folks learn more about coming to see The Lobster Man and Slim and Cabal?
Well, you can go to the production
the blog
companies.
You right?
Well, yes, you can definitely go to the blog, which you'll link to, I'm sure. There is ticket links on the blog where we're selling tickets through Brown Paper Tickets. If you go to Brown Paper Tickets and just search Cowboy Mouth, you'll come up. It'll come up. We're playing till June 22nd. So there's lots of opportunities to see us, but the house is very intimate, and you really can't fit more than 25 people. So when it's sold out, it's sold out.
Yeah.
And so far, we've been packed to the rafters every night we've done it.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And day we've done it. So we want to keep that going on. We want to keep... keep filling the room and sharing this piece that has been such a joy to work on with these people, to as many people as we can.
Yeah.
Break legs on the run.
Thanks to Leah, Diana, Jeff, and Matt for hanging out after the show to chat with me. You've still got a couple weeks left to check out Cowboy Mouth, but as was mentioned, space is limited, so you should get your tickets now. Remaining performances are through June 22nd on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 8 p.m., Fridays again at 10 p.m., and one more Sunday performance on June 17th at 5 p.m. Head over to brownpapertickets.com and search Cowboy Mouth to get your tickets, and visit oneoldcrowproductions.com for more information on the producing company. And now, the standard outro plugs. Please like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow my Twitter feed at GoSeeAShow. And please give a rating and a comment over on iTunes. As always, send any comments and suggestions, praise, or complaints to me at Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, at GoSeeAShowPodcast.com. Until next time, go see a show.
Congrats. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you. Nice meeting you.
Nice to meet y'all.